This is Eddie Hyatt. This is the Awakening Podcast. Our theme this week is the war on America's Christian past. There is a war instigated by secularist Marxists who want to radically transform this nation, and they realize that to do this, that they need to cut America off from her Christian past. For as Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a Russian who spent 8 years in a Russian and a Soviet communist labor camp and observed how the Marxists sought to cut off the Russian people from their Christian past, he made this statement. He said, to destroy a people, you must first sever their roots. And there is an all-out attempt to sever this generation from our Christian roots, which are very clear and powerful there in our history. For it was a great awakening that swept up and down the eastern seaboard, transforming entire communities, that gave birth to this nation and unleashed the spiritual and moral forces that brought about the eventual end of slavery on this continent. And we're going to talk about that today, about this abolition movement that arose. But just before we get to that, I want to mention, we were talking about George Whitefield and his ministry and his meetings. He talks about both blacks and whites being there. And he would address the blacks in the audience, telling them that God was calling them to himself. And he preached in Boston. There was a young black woman by the name of Phyllis Wheatley who must have been in those meetings. Phyllis Wheatley had been sold by an African chief of her tribe when she was 7 years old. He sold her into slavery. She was bought to America, and she was purchased by the Whitley family in Boston. The Whitley family treated her like a daughter, gave her a really good education. One writer said that was rare for either a male or female in the culture of that time. They gave her a very good education. They recognized she had a poetic gift. They encouraged her in her writing of poetry. They even took her to England and shared her poetry with members of the royal family. She had her books of poetry published. I believe she may have been the first black published poet in America. George Washington read her poems and sent her a personal letter commending her for her writing ability and her poetry. Now, she was from Boston. Whitefield preached in Boston more than once on the Boston Common to many thousands of people. And when he passed away, Phyllis Wheatley, I believe she was 17 years old at the time, she wrote a very moving poem in honor of Whitefield. And I suspect that she was converted under Whitefield's ministry. And I want to read to you what she wrote, because it's obvious that she heard those strains of equality, of inclusion in the gospel message that Whitefield preached, that this gospel message is for everyone. The ground is level at the cross, in other words. And this is what she wrote. She said, "Thou didst in strains of eloquence refine." Whitefield was known as a very eloquent preacher. "Thou didst in strains of eloquence refined inflame the heart and captivate the mind. The greatest gift that even God can give, he freely offered to the numerous throng." And now she quotes, I believe she quotes here from Whitefield's own preaching. "He freely offered to the numerous throng, 'Take him, ye Africans, he longs for you. Impartial Savior is his title due. Washed in the fountain of redeeming blood, you shall be sons and kings and priests of God.'" In this, her first published poem, Wheatley quoted directly from Whitefield. It is easy to imagine Whitefield, knowing his dramatic and passionate style of preaching, it is easy to imagine him crying out to the blacks in his audience, "Take him, you Africans, he longs for you." This was likely the case in one of his Philadelphia meetings, in which his message left many blacks weeping and in awe. One black woman said that he must have been in a trance, and she insisted Jesus Christ must have told him what to speak to the people, or else he could not speak as he did. So, as I said in an earlier podcast, at this time, the preaching was evangelistic, but it was breaking down the racial and cultural barriers and bringing blacks and whites together. But then, in the succeeding, as new preachers begin to rise up and come on the scene, they begin to take the preaching of the Great Awakening of their mentors to the next logical conclusion. If we are all creations of the same God, of the same Creator, and if we all equally fail in Adam, and Jesus Christ redeemed us all equally, then how can there ever be slavery? And so, based on the gospel and on a biblical Christian paradigm, they begin to viciously attack the institution of slavery. I'm going to read some quotes here. A disciple of Jonathan Edwards, his name, Samuel Hopkins, and he was tutored by Jonathan Edwards. And Jonathan Edwards also told of blacks being saved there in Massachusetts. So even though the population would have been small, he spoke of them being born again and coming to Christ. Samuel Hopkins, he pastored for a time in Newport, which was a seaport center of the transatlantic slave trade. And he observed what was happening. He observed slaves being brought over in the ships. And his response was like Paul's response to the idols in Athens, where Paul's spirit was provoked. And Hopkins was deeply outraged by what he stirred and what he called this violation of God's will. And he declared, "This whole country have their hands full of blood." And he began to preach passionately against the institution of slavery. In 1774, after the First Continental Congress had convened in Philadelphia, Hopkins sent a pamphlet to every member of the Congress asking how they could complain about enslavement to England and overlook the enslavement of so many blacks in the colonies. And so as liberty was becoming a watchword in colonial America, liberty from the oppressive British monarchy and British Parliament, these awakening preachers began to apply it to the enslaved in America. And they pointed out the hypocrisy of demanding liberty from Great Britain while at the same time enslaving Africans in their own land. In this attack on slavery, Hopkins was joined by other followers of Edwards, including Levi Hart in Connecticut, Jacob Green in New Jersey, and Edwards' own son, Jonathan Jr. And then other preachers began to arise and to preach against slavery. The Baptist preacher, John Allen, he reminds me of a son of thunder. He was very direct and he thundered, "Blush, ye pretended votaries of freedom, you trifling patriots who are making a vain parade of being advocates for the liberties of mankind, who are thus making a mockery of your Christian profession by trampling on the sacred rights and privileges of Africans." This abolition movement began to grow, it began to swell, and it spread throughout the colonies, even became powerful in the South, of course, where it met with much opposition. But it was this great awakening which unleashed this moral outrage. It unleashed the spiritual and moral forces that would be necessary for bringing about the eventual end of slavery in America. And I want to go ahead and I want to read a quote from a well-known scholar. His name is Thomas Sowell. I think I read it in a previous podcast. But this statement is so very, very powerful. And he talks about how, well, just bear with me, I'm turning over to it now. Oh, I picked up the wrong book. That's the problem. That's another book. That's a good book, Pilgrims and Patriots. But the quote that I am looking for is here in the book 1726. And Thomas Sowell, an African-American scholar, says slavery was just not an issue in the 18th century. Not even among intellectuals. It was practiced all over the world, but it wasn't an issue. Not even among intellectuals, much less among political leaders until the 18th century. And then it was an issue only in Western civilization. Among those who turned against slavery in the 18th century were George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, and other leaders. You could research all of the 18th century Africa or Asia or the Middle East without finding any comparable rejection of slavery there. My friends, the 1619 Project is a total distortion of America's history. It does not acknowledge, it does not recognize what we are talking about here today, that it was God's grace poured out in this great awakening that actually brought about the end of slavery on this continent. It was a great spiritual awakening that had a direct bearing on the founding of America and also had a direct bearing on the ending of slavery on the American continent. Wow. And so, you know, the key to America today, America is as divided, probably more so than it's been since the Civil War. The political divisions are deep, and there is so much anger and hatred politically, and racial animosity, not as much as the mainstream media would like us to think there is, but it is being exploited by those who want to transform the nation. But you see, the same thing that brought this nation into existence and brought about the end of slavery on this continent is what will save America today. Another great spiritual awakening. If you do not have a copy of 1726, I hope you'll go to Amazon or go to my website, eddiehyatt.com. Get a copy for yourself and a copy for your pastor, because this is the answer and the counter for the 1619 Project, which is actually teaching people to hate America. But God brought forth this nation forth, and God is not through with America, and we need to understand from whence we have come. That is so important, because I will close with this quote from Carl Sandburg, a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian and author. And he said, when a nation goes down or a society perishes, one condition may always be found. They forgot where they came from. This book, 1726, is a reminder of where we have come from. God bless you. This is Eddie Hyatt. I'll see you on the next Awakening Podcast.